Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Vince Clark, head men's golf coach and professor of history at MCC, and Wendell Hudson, retired MCC athletic director, team up to talk about leadership. Hosting the conversation is KWBU President Joe Riley. The conversation was recorded August 23, 2019, in the KWBU studio.
Vince Clark, Wendell Hudson, so glad that you're here with us today. You know, I was one of the crowd at recently at a Hewitt Chamber of Commerce presentation where the two of you kind of back-to-back talked about things that had to do in the end with leadership. And I thought, well, these guys need to be on radio. I need to get you on the leadership series. So we're just glad to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having us over. We actually had a really good time at the chamber meeting, too. It was fun.
Joe, yes, we had a really good time. I don't know if anybody else enjoyed that or not, but we did.
Well, I certainly enjoyed it, and I'm glad you're here with us today. But I was fascinated by the stories you told, which are very different from each other, but together, put together, you come up with one story that really talks about friendship and leadership is really where that went. I'm interested in starting with a little bit about your backgrounds and who influenced you growing up. Vince, what about you?
So I grew up in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri. My family had a farm, so I grew up doing chores, hauling hay and feeding livestock and building fence and picking rocks. And my father's father was a cowboy. My father was a cowboy, and they tried to make a cowboy out of me. So I grew up a cowboy. It was a magnificent childhood. I absolutely loved it. In retrospect, I loved it. At the time, we had to work pretty hard, I think. That was important to my father, that I work hard. And when I was the age of my students today or my players on the team, I thought my father worked me entirely too hard. I probably resented it a little bit. But today, as you've all alluded to, I've got two full-time jobs at MCC, and I work all the time. I don't even draw a breath, and I think that's because of the work ethic that my father instilled in me.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Now, I remember you talking about there was one thing, a little phrase that...
It's the cowboy code. I mean, it is what it is. You have to deal with it. It doesn't matter how cold it is outside. The cattle have to be fed. Get up and get your job done. And it doesn't matter how hard it's raining outside. If the fence is broken, you have to go out there and fix it. It is what it is, and you deal with it. And I've just sort of carried that cowboy code with me into my profession, into the rest of my life.
And that makes a real difference. And I'm sure your students can see that and pick up on that as well, those expectations.
MCC is paying me to do my job. And they're not paying for my C game or my B game. They're paying for my A game. And I work really hard to try to do that. And some days I'm better than others. But I promise I'm working really hard to try to give them my A game. I hope my students appreciate that.
I've heard from former students, and I know they do. I know they do. Wendell, in your introduction, we left out a whole lot of things, and I'm about to leave out a bunch of things as well. But a couple of things stand out earlier on in your life. You were the first African-American athletic scholarship student at the University of Alabama.
Correct.
And you played for the Chicago Bulls.
Yes. But I'm old enough to play for the Memphis Tams, so I'm an old man.
Your career has gone. It's been a great career, and you ended up here in Waco at MCC.
Yes, it has been a great career, and I tell people I don't really have a bucket list, because most of the things that I would think that would go in a bucket list, I've kind of already done them. and ended up at MCC, which I think is a great place to work. It was a dream come true from a working standpoint and from a people standpoint.
Who influenced you growing up?
I'm a product of a single-parent home. My mother, who worked hard every day, that did not make excuses for little bitty things. For example, this is a little bitty thing in some people's mind. When I went to school, there were days that my mother would show up at school when I thought, you know, you're supposed to be at work. And because she would show up at school, I was a good student. I was a good kid. Because the consequences for not being a good kid would be handled right there at school. But she would show up, and as I grew older with my own kids, the importance of showing up at school, you know, they would be, my own kids would say, "Dad, why you come up to the school all the time?" Well, I was already taught that by a single mom with a sister, with all the working all the time situation that she was involved in. But there was no excuses for her not to show up in her mind and be a parent with kids in elementary school. And, you know, thank goodness she didn't show up in high school that much.
How'd the two of you become friends?
Well, we 25 years ago, I started working for MCC, but first as a professor, not in coaching. But I also was a pretty good golfer, and I was playing golf one day, and I looked across, and the MCC coaches were out there, and one of them called me over, and I introduced me to Coach Hudson. Wendell and I met there, and nothing much followed that except another afternoon, late after class, I was out there playing by myself, and so was Wendell. And we joined up, and we started walking the course together, and we had a delightful time. There's so much time in between shots for talking and philosophizing and lying and teasing each other. And we started that 25 years ago, and we haven't stopped, really. We don't play as much as we used to, but that we still do all of the rest of it, I think.
Well, and part of that story is that we were walking. You know, there was only a couple people would walk and play golf during July and August around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Let me rephrase that. I don't know if we were very smart at that time either, but we would be walking and talking. And so that was the time we spent together just visiting and getting to know each other and playing golf. And I was really trying to win a Coke off of Vince. That was my goal, was to try to win a Coke. But I don't know if I ever won a Coke, but I tried. I was not going to give up. But just during that period of time of talking and walking and talking about coaching and philosophy about leadership, and not necessarily talking about leadership, just talking about, hey, what would you do in this situation? And, you know, as we talked about different situations and what we would do, we started thinking, okay, you know, we kind of agree on too many things here.
I honestly, Wendell and I were friends for a long period of time before I realized how important he is. I didn't know your whole story. We were pals before I got to know your story, and I don't think I told you about my father until in the last just a handful of years.
Yeah, and we were pals for a long time.
Yeah, well, a quarter century.
And I found out, and he gave me a magazine, actually an old magazine, and I looked at it, and I read it, and I thought, you know, I've been knowing you for this long. Why hadn't I seen this magazine before? About his father and some of the things. I knew a little bit about his father, you know, but in the process of talking, it's hard for me to talk without my hands, who are mm-hmm. two on the radio. But in the process of talking to each other and asking questions and pushing each other, we even pushed each other to, hey, you got to defend your belief about this. This is the way you do it. And sometimes we pushed each other, and other people would hear us. They would think, man, these guys cannot be friends pushing each other this way.
For those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley talking today with Vince Clark, head men's golf coach and professor of history at McLennan Community College, and Wendell Hudson, retired MCC athletic director, among many other things and talking about your backgrounds. So you were one of the things you were just talking about is a little bit more about Vince, your father. Tell us, he was more than just a cowboy.
So my father was also a lawyer, and he wanted me to be a lawyer. And he was actually a United States District Judge. He was federal judge in the state of Missouri. What Wendell's talking about, what you're asking me about, is the fact that he had many cases, but probably the most famous was he drew a case involving the Kansas City school system. Over half a generation, the inner city schools had fallen into significant disrepair. The tiles were coming off of the floors. The commodes wouldn't flush. The ceilings were just crumbling chunks of asbestos. And actually, rats were running up and down the rafters during and between classes. But the problem is that any inner city residents could not afford a tax increase to repair the schools. In fact, most of the people with money had moved out of the inner city into the suburbs. This is a trend, a model that is in a lot of places other than just Kansas City. You can find that in other places of the nation. Well, what happened is that the parents and students of the inner city schools in Kansas City filed a civil rights lawsuit, and it ended up before my father, who I don't know that he really wanted that case, but remember the cowboy code. It is what it is. You deal with it. And so my father had to get involved in that. And this would have been back in the 1970s, and one of the solutions they were trying to implement for this kind of situation was busing. But it was controversial, and I'm not sure it was always – I know it wasn't embraced, and I don't know how unsuccessful it really was. And so he decided that we weren't going to bus kids across school lines. Instead, he adopted a proposal, a plan that was brought to him, where they would build a magnet school system, the best schools in all of Missouri. And that way, parents who wanted their kids to go to the best schools would send them to downtown Kansas City. So to pay for that, he put a tax on the suburban residents, small, I don't remember, it was a sales tax, excise, some kind of tax on the suburban residents. And because the state of Missouri had actually ignored this problem for 20 years, they also had to pay a small piece of the pie. So when I was growing up, my father was one of the most unpopular men in the state. There were death threats against Dad. Actually, there were death threats against the family. My father, or my sister, I have a younger sister, and she answered the phone at the house one time, and they asked her, is your father home? And she said no. And the person on the other line said, that's because I just killed him. Hmm. Which wasn't true, but could you imagine being, he was probably 12 or 13 years old, could you imagine having to deal with something like that at that time? In fact, one time when I was at Baylor, the marshals had to come and get me out of a class in Tidwell Hall because of a situation that was going on with my family at home. So it was hard. I say that he was hated. Not everyone hated him, because the students, the parents, and the teachers, the administrators of the Kansas City school system, they loved him. In fact, at his funeral, members of the Kansas City School Board drove all the way to Springfield, Missouri. So in terms of geography, it's 3.5-hour drive. And they came down along with leaders from the NAACP just to tell my mother and my sister and me that because of his efforts, they felt like my father was a civil rights hero. The sad part of it is that before he died, he realized that his plan didn't work. They built beautiful schools, but the parents in the suburban areas just did not want their kids to go inner city. So that's, it's kind of a tragic end, but he, not for his want for trying. I mean, he did try.
Mm. And it, clearly, this has had an influence on you and your character to this day.
I became a lawyer because that's what my father wanted, but I actually think I became a teacher. I think I'm the teacher I am today because of the example that he set. I mean, my father wanted, he believed that people need champions, and that's what I'm trying to teach today. It's part of what links Wendell and me too, because Wendell is the ultimate champion. I'm not just on the basketball court, and absolutely not on the golf course. but he is a champion in terms of treating people right and setting the right example for people to follow.
Wendell, you had your own challenges.
I had a few. And the story that I tell all the time, one of the stories that I tell when people ask me about being the first African-American to be on scholarship at the University of Alabama, and this was in 1969, which makes me really old. But anyway, was the first day that I got on campus. And the first day that I got on campus, it was two-a-day football practice. And I kind of got on campus and moved in the athletic dorm, which you could have athletic dorms back then, in between the football practice. The football team was actually at practice. And so the first meal that I had when the football team was in the cafeteria that was in the, which at that time was Bryant Hall, which was an athletic dormitory. I can remember that day, and I probably would never forget that day and how that day was spent. But one of the things that happened, the football team was already in there eating. And so it was a friend of mine still to this day. Matter of fact, I talked to him 2 days ago, named Ben Charette, who was the manager of our basketball team, and another guy, another basketball player. We all went down into the cafeteria to eat together because we were basketball people, you know, just kind of going down into the cafeteria to eat. And the way the cafeteria was set up, you had to come in the door and walk down a line and then go through the serving line and that kind of thing. And so we walked into the building, and there was a line. And as I walked through the line, I noticed that it got awful quiet. It was getting quieter. Because when we first walked in the line, the football team was there, and they were eating, and there was all kind of noise, and people talking about practice, and all kind of noise, and noise, and noise, and noise, and noise, and noise, and it kept going down to the point where, as we're sitting right here where we are right now with this carpet on the floor, and I've heard people say you can hear a pin drop on carpet, and I promise you it would have been like a cymbal by the time I got up to the front of the line. And my teammates, and especially the manager, noticed. He was like, hey, it's awful quiet in here. I'm like, yeah, I wonder why. But the good thing and the funny thing, another side of that story is that when I got up to the serving line and got the people behind the line serving was all black. And so with smiles on their faces, with, you know, they didn't know me and I didn't know them, but the fact that there was an African-American on this side of the line going through their own scholarship. And the big part of this story, or one part of the story, is that when I came through that line and when I got on the other side with my tray, I probably needed help to carry all the food that I had on that tray to get to the table. And the talk started back up, but not ever at the level that it was when I first walked in there.
Did you see a change at Alabama over the course of the years that you were there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I saw a change in the in athletics is a funny business. You know, because once you start playing together on a team and sweating together, you know, things change a lot. And this is also the time from a historical standpoint when Alabama played USC in Birmingham, Alabama, and USC beat Alabama really bad, and Sam Cunningham, who was an African-American, ran all over Alabama, and so some history started. I was a freshman, and a lot of changes happened during that period of time.
This, for those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley talking with Wendell Hudson, who's as you've been hearing, has a varied background, but most recently retired MCC athletic director, and with Vince Clark, the head men's golf coach and professor of history at McLennan Community College. One of the things that is sticking with me right now is you two are both really good at storytelling. How important is storytelling when it comes to leadership?
You know, I think the narrative is what connects people to people. You can look at somebody and there is a connection, but when you actually start to compare stories, when stories go back and forth, that's where you have a real connection. The best orators, I'm thinking about just in my lifetime, leaders in Washington, D.C. or in Austin, the best orators were also extraordinary storytellers. So I don't want to call it a dying art, because we go to movies and we watch stories and we see stories on television, but for somebody just to be able to stand up and tell a story and to hold people's attention, there are fewer and fewer people who can do that. Wendell is one of the guys who can do that. You think about his story, Joe. In 1969, when he goes to Alabama, this is only 6 years after George Wallace stood in the, as he said, schoolhouse door at, was it Foster Auditorium, Wendell?
Foster Auditorium.
Yeah, this is the same year that when Wallace was inaugurated governor of Alabama, and he made the famous statement, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And this is the context that Wendell steps onto the campus at Tuscaloosa. Even if the times were changing, I don't know, Wendell, is there any way we could ever count how many extra elbows you received or how many fouls that some other team's player who objected to your presence put on you, and a referee looked the other way. In fact, Mississippi, didn't you foul out of a game in Mississippi?
In 5 minutes. My first trip to the University of Mississippi, and back then we had freshman teams. So my first trip to the University of Mississippi, I played, I say 5 minutes, it might have been shorter than 5 minutes, because the first 3 minutes of the first half, I got three fouls that I was not even close to. And yes, the rebel flags was flying, and yes, all of the things that were being said, and yes, it was a bad, bad situation. And to start the second half, I got two more fouls, and I remember my last foul, and I was at least 20 feet away from the whatever the action was, but some kind of way the official blew the whistle and they weaved through about four or five different players and they pointed at me and I sit on the bench. Now, what did that do? I sit on the bench for the rest of the game. First, I sit on the bench for most of the game. But my teammates, which these guys are really good friends of mine now, most of them are really good friends, they learned a valuable lesson because they heard all the racial slurs that they could hear about me. But I was their teammate. This is my friend. This guy sweat with me. This guy's worked out with me on all of the above. And what they found out was, you know, something is wrong with these people. But that guy right there is pretty good. And one of my teammates, a guy named Farrah Alford, he lives in Lexington, Kentucky. And we talk all the time today. He said, Hud, I don't know if I could have done it. He said, I don't know if I could have sit there doing that and be as, in his words, strong as you were to not react to some of the situations and that situation that you was put in. And he said, and we're still friends today, but in our relationship has been as strong in relationship with a bunch of those guys who I played with. It's been as good as it could possibly be. But we were also bound together and bound together by being teammates, but also bound together by going through adversity together.
Mm-hmm. While you go through these things, how much are you aware that your reaction is being watched by others, that you are having an influence on other people?
I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't realize what sitting there and being a part and not reacting the way people wanted me to react to that situation, that the influence that it had on my teammates until later on. And, you know, when you got guys coming up to you, you know, even now, my wife laughs at me all the time. She says, I get tired of them guys telling me about you and the way you handle that situation. And she's kidding, of course. But you know, and they're talking to sometimes they can have their kids with them or grandkids with them at this point. And they're telling that same story. So that reaction and people watching you and you're not knowing exactly what they see, the influence that you have had on those people, and not only on them, but other people and family, and taking it another step, I definitely was not aware of it at the time.
So I think, you know, we do what we do because it's right. I mean, this is the way I was taught. It is what it is. Deal with it. I mean, and Wendell could have walked away, quit at any point, except that that's not the way he was taught. That's not what his mother and his grandparents instilled in him. And actually, that's one of the things that connected us as we got to be friends, even before we knew each other's backstories. It was the idea that there are no excuses. We don't make excuses, not in the game and of golf, and not in life either. And that, for me, it was a cowboy code. For him, it was his mother.
It was a park code.
His mother's spanking him for something he didn't do, and he told her, I didn't do that. And she said, well, you probably did something. And so it's just, we're just not.
And she was probably right.
But that's what connected us, Joe, is that we don't make excuses, and the reason we do that is, or the reason we don't is because that's the way we live. If that is also an example for others, then I'm not embarrassed by that.
How important is friendship in life, in leadership? How important is friendship?
Well, you know, our friendship grew and have grown and it's kept growing. But we talked about everything, hard things, easy things. And I think that's the difference about friendships. It's not that we just laid out the vanilla things to talk about, you know, and we've disagreed on things. And we've walked away and said, hey, you know, in this case, we need to disagree in a respectful manner. But the fact that I think that's part of the problem that we have today in this world is that we can't talk about hard things and disagree and still be respectful and have a friendship with each other.
I don't know that I could do this job without my friendships. And I don't have an assistant coach. We've already talked about the fact that if I needed counsel, I needed at least somebody to listen to me. That was Wendell, and he also uses up part of my time too, been to my ear. So that's a good. I don't know that I could do it without friendship, Joe.
Yes. Well, I'm sure that applies actually to all of us. That friendship is important, and leadership. People we can look to and learn from is important. Vince Clark and Wendell Hudson, I want to thank you both again for joining us today. This has just been fascinating. I wish we had time to talk longer, but thank you so much.
It's been an honor.
Thank you, Joe.
This program was recorded August 23rd, 2019 in the KWBU studio. This and past episodes can be found on our website at kwbu.org.